violence against women or violence against anyone is a choice. Somebody is making a choice to want to control another human being. And so it is truly a choice to want to control, want to have power over another person. It is never due to someone's behavior, maybe the way a person is dressed or how they are acting. It is always due to someone wanting power and control over another person.
This is The Traverse Cityist. I'm Gretchen Carr. The mission of The Traverse Cityist is to preserve the voices of the Traverse City region. You can listen to past episodes at traversecityist.com and on most podcast platforms. You can also follow The Traverse Cityist on Instagram. This episode of The Traverse Cityist is brought to you by 11. 11 is a woman-owned boutique in Traverse City, celebrating 10 years in our amazing community. We are all about sustainable designer fashion, accessories, and inspired decor, thoughtfully sourced with an emphasis on quality textiles and body positivity. Giving back is essential to what we do, which is why we are proud to support conversations that uplift women. Visit us in-store or online to shop with purpose. The prolonged slavery of women is the darkest page in human history. That statement is attributed to Elizabeth Cady Stanton, who formulated the agenda for women's rights, guiding the struggle well into the 20th century. Stanton authored the Declaration of Sentiments, which expanded on the Declaration of Independence by adding the word woman or women throughout. This pivotal document called for social and legal changes to elevate women's place in society and listed 18 grievances, from the inability to control women's wages and property or the difficulty in gaining custody and divorce to the lack of the right to vote. The struggle for women's equality has its own history in Traverse City, Michigan. This spring, the Women's Resource Center will commemorate 50 years of empowering survivors and why their mission remains critical at this pivotal time in history. This episode features a conversation with the organization's executive director, Juliette Schultz, and longtime board member, Jane Hayes.
My name is Juliette Schultz, and I am the executive director with the Women's Resource Center. And our mission is to protect, shelter, and empower people impacted by domestic and sexual violence. And we've been doing this good work since 1975.
And I'm Jane Hayes, and I'm currently on the board of the Women's Resource Center and a past president of the board. My association of the board goes with the Women's Resource Center goes back to the early 80s when I was a student earning my MSW degree. So I have had a long association. The whole issue of domestic violence and sexual assault was, for me, an awakening.
Historically, WRC was formed to provide support to women who are re-entering the employment market and were looking for childcare. And very quickly, the folks who founded the center recognized that domestic violence was preventing women from doing those things. And back in 1975, it was not a crime to commit domestic violence.
In 1975, the Traverse City Women's Resource Center was founded by 9 passionate women. Those women were Nancy Hayward, Jean Whitcomb Campbell, Phyllis Parks, Patricia Hilton, Marcia Smith, Linda Arnold, Lucille Schreier, Ruth Spensley, and Lynn Feeder.
Back in the mid-1970s, I believe the women of Traverse City began to find each other and to provide support. It was a period in the women's movement when women were really beginning to reach out to one another and to dialogue and support. Sometimes not always sure why they were coming together, but they were finding one another just to sit down and talk and to share what their experiences were. And that happened here in Traverse City, and it was going on all across the country. At the same time, the civil rights movement and all that was happening in the 1960s was certainly influencing us. And we were beginning to ask questions about what exactly was our role in society. And we, many of us, were educated and had the opportunity to do a lot, but found that path challenging to move forward. Mm-hmm. We began to realize that, I think what began to happen is the talking and the sharing and the writing began, and people began publishing books like The Feminine Mystique and Men, Women, and Rape by Susan Brown Miller. That began to bring women together in groups. They began to talk. Ideas began to form, and suddenly they began to set up organizations like the Women's Resource Center. And that's basically what happened here in Traverse. A group of women, one of them is currently president of our board, Ruth Bloomer. Marcia Smith is another one who has headed up Rotary and is now in retirement like I am. But we've all continued to remain committed to what the mission is. The mission started out as more of a support system for women, gave us a path of how to begin to develop our own relationships and begin to move in to areas of employment, areas of leadership. Mm-hmm. And then we began to become aware of the whole issue of violence against women. And many, many had our own stories to tell.
One of those stories rocked the nation, which brought the issue of domestic violence into the community's focus.
Back in 1975, it was not a crime to commit domestic violence. And so there was a trial that a woman named Jeanette Smith was accused of murdering her abusive husband. And Dean Robb, who is a local activist attorney, took the case. And Jeanette Smith wound up, the trial took place in Kalkaska, and Jeanette Smith wound up becoming one of the first women acquitted of battered women's syndrome in the United States.
According to the Diagnostic Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, battered woman syndrome is a pattern of signs and symptoms displayed by a woman who has suffered persistent intimate partner violence, psychological, physical, or sexual, from her partner, usually male. The condition is the basis for the battered women legal defense that has been used in cases of physically and psychologically abused women who have killed their male partners, which was the case with Jeanette Smith. During Jeanette's trial, one woman rallied the community for her support. That woman was Mary Sutherland.
Mary Sutherland was a major contributor to all of that from the very earliest days. I think Mary had, she was a very strong woman and an incredibly powerful woman who was very articulate about who she was and her commitment to supporting women, and certainly was a force in everything that happened here. And she woke up the community and began to rally people around Jeanette, mm-hmm. and began to provide support and engaged the services of Dean Robb, found a support system for that. And Jeanette was tried by a jury of 6 men and 6 women, and she was found not guilty. So it's, it was a powerful story.
Jeanette's trial and the outcome prompted the Women's Resource Center to shift its focus.
And that was a turning point for the Women's Resource Center. That was the moment when we as an organization recognized domestic violence is preventing women from succeeding and from really reaching their own potentials, and what is it that we can do about it? And so at that point in time, the mission shifted and turned towards focusing on violence against women.
Michigan did not pass domestic violence legislation until 1994. Michigan law cites domestic violence as the occurrence of any of the following by an individual: causing or attempting to cause physical or mental harm to a family or household member, and placing a family or household member in fear of physical or mental harm. Now, more than 30 years since this legislation, the mission of the Women's Resource Center remains a critical one.
We are an emergency landing pad for people who are fleeing domestic violence. Mm-hmm. We are the first line of defense for victims of domestic violence who are in crisis situations. Mm-hmm. We have a 24-hour hotline. We are providing shelter to women. We know that domestic violence is one of the leading causes of homelessness in women. We have a shelter for that reason.
In 1983, Sharon Tipton, the former Women's Resource Center executive director, opened the first emergency shelter for survivors of domestic violence in Traverse City.
Those shelters at that point nationally were kind of connected into one another. It was a little bit of a, I guess you'd call it, an underground movement. And of course, when the shelters began to open, like the shelter in Traverse City in 83, communities started to become more connected to the whole issue, which kind of expanded support for what was going on. And of course, in our shelter, Ralph Seffredini, who's a former chief of police, came onto the board in the 1980s, and that was a major plus and a major support for the Women's Resource Center in Traverse City.
Traverse City Police Department Chief Ralph Soffredini forged a critical bridge which prompted community-wide support for the Women's Resource Center. A few years later, Carol Rose began working as a part-time employee volunteer and went on to build the thrift shops. The revenue from the thrift shops remains vital to the mission of the Women's Resource Center. Networking and collaboration within the community is also vital to the mission.
That's one thing about Traverse City, and I think I've seen that since I moved here. This is a very collaborative town. People really want to connect, and they really want to support. I think you see that in all areas here, too. When there's a need, there's a response.
According to the National Institute of Health, violence against women is an urgent priority as it affects individuals, their families and surroundings, and the entire global health community.
At the national level, in the bigger picture, 1 in 4 women and 1 in 7 men will be impacted by domestic violence in their lifetimes. Locally, when we think about the Women's Resource Center, and there are about 70 of us throughout the state of Michigan, so we're not alone. We have lots of other agencies that provide similar services to us. Our organization receives over 5,000 phone calls to our 24-hour helpline every year. 1,000 of those calls are from survivors in immediate crisis. They need help, and now. Almost every survivor that we meet with, and I would hazard to say 99% of the folks that we work with, walk away with a safety plan of some sort. So even if the survivor does not intend to leave, they have a safety plan that's put together with an advocate as to keep them safe in the moment, regardless of if they're coming into the shelter, if they're living on their own, if their abuser is still living in the same under the same roof in the same household. I think the word resource is really important too. We are constantly referring survivors to resources that they may need. We work very closely with Addiction Treatment Services, very closely with Goodwill, very closely with Northwest Michigan Community Action Agency, very closely with Father Fred. We are constantly working with other nonprofits and providing resources to survivors that they say that they need. So we are using an empowerment-based philosophy. Survivor tells us what they want, and we respond to that. And so I think resource has always been a very important part of our name and something that people may or may not understand, that we're doing that work with those over 5,000 people that are calling on us.
Why do you think men choose to commit violence against women when they're trying to control them?
You want to go first?
You go first.
Violence against women or violence against anyone is a choice. Somebody is making a choice to want to control another human being. And so it is truly a choice to want to control, want to have power over another person. It is never due to someone's behavior, maybe the way a person is dressed or how they are acting. It is always due to someone wanting power and control over another person. The majority of the people that we work with identify as women, and women are still recognized as a marginalized community, and there is inequity. And so, you know, society as a whole at this point still sees women as less than. And but ultimately, the decision to want to have power and control over somebody is what causes violence against women.
It's not always a conscious choice, like we go to make a decision and we think our way through things. It's not that kind of a choice, but it is a choice that has been influenced by the social conditioning, cultural conditioning of our society, which really views women as individuals or not even individuals, but as a group to be controlled. It's a culture of dominance. It's a culture of power over a group of people who are different than they as males.
Yeah, so it's truly exerting control. And, you know, for us, Women's Resource Center, you know, I think that folks may think, well, only women are allowed to come here or welcome here, and that's not true. The truth of the matter is that we welcome anyone. It doesn't matter how you identify. Mm-hmm. And over the years that I've been here, the number of men that we are serving has increased over time. There is a high degree of violence within LGBTQ communities. Mm-hmm. And so we don't turn anyone away. I think the important thing to keep in mind about domestic and sexual violence is that it comes down to power and control. Mm-hmm. And it's not about, am I attracted to you? It's not about anything that the victim or the survivor did. It's about a person making a decision to want to exert that power and control and that dominance over another person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And sometimes it's very conscious. Other times, it's the result of having grown up in the culture itself.
I can't help but think about all these moments that I've had where men have tried to exert their power and control over me, or I've witnessed it with other people, men and women.
Yeah,
and
it can be subtle.
And it's very, very subtle. And
it can be such a subtle thing. Mm-hmm. It can be as subtle as a person who wants to know where you are all the time, who's texting and wanting to know where are you at every given moment of the day. It can be, and I heard this, I overheard a conversation in Glen Arbor one summer, and I was sitting next to two young women, and the one was talking to the other about her boyfriend who always wants to know where she is. And for me, it's a red flag. It is stalking behavior, and stalking is a form of domestic violence. And so, you know, I think that we have a perception that domestic violence is about physical violence and somebody who's being beaten. And it is so much more than that, and it includes economic abuse, it includes psychological abuse, it includes sexual abuse, it includes stalking behavior. It includes emotional abuse. And so we've had women come to us who've been in long marriages who didn't even really recognize that they were in unhealthy relationships or they were victims of domestic violence. Mm-hmm. And the light bulb goes on, and then they are either making a decision, oh my gosh, I'm in an unhealthy relationship. I've been emotionally abused for years. Now what do I do? And so, you know, I think about Jane and her history with the organization and these women who came along with Jane, who were activists and who recognized that this is a pattern behavior and that how can we support women at every step, regardless of their background? What can we do for them?
Jane believes that it is important to reflect on history.
I believe it's time for women to go back and recognize that the women's movement is not a new movement. It's not something that began in the 1960s. It's not even something that, you know, these suffragettes were busy trying to get the right to vote for in the 1920s. It goes farther back than that. Women, historically and worldwide, have been placed in a position where others have had power and control over what our participation and purpose was in the society. I believe we're at a point where women and the world, people around the world, are beginning to really understand that. We've lived through the civil rights movement. We have been supportive of one another throughout that history. We see this discussion on gender issues that I believe people believe there was great forward movement on, but we are at a point in time in history right now where worldwide we see a resurgence of power and greed, wanting to maintain a structure that quite frankly is no longer functional at this point in time in history. There's a movement forward toward equality. There are generations who have struggled to move us forward and continue to struggle. I mean, there's a lot of younger people who get this. A lot of marriage today is being redefined. Families are being redefined as what is a family. We're in a very turbulent time.
In May, you're going to be celebrating, mm-hmm. honoring 50 years of work and helping survivors. Let's talk about that.
I think it's a really big moment for the Women's Resource Center to celebrate 50 years of caring for survivors in this community, mm-hmm. and to look ahead to the next 50 years. We're not going anywhere. I'm a true believer that there's always dark before the light. And I've seen it too many times play out at the Women's Resource Center with survivors who walk up our front step and it's not their best day. And within a matter of, you know, days, weeks, months, sometimes years, the light comes. And this is our opportunity to step into the light and really share with the community what we have accomplished on behalf of those who've needed us most.
This coming May, the Women's Resource Center will commemorate 50 years of service with a reflection on two critical stories of domestic violence that occurred decades apart: Jeanette Smith's 1979 story and the 2018 story of Tina Talbot. Their stories were told through the media, the courts, and communities of people who supported them with services and, more importantly, acknowledged the reality of the violence they endured.
And we have an extraordinary speaker in Tina Talbot, who also was in a situation where it was a killer be killed situation with her abusive husband, who intended to kill her and her son. And she took his life and saved her and her son's life. And she is currently waiting a pardon from the governor. She did her time in prison for that crime. She's been released, and she's been working with the Women's Center downstate every step of the way and has an advocate and has been on that healing journey. And she didn't know the signs of domestic violence. She didn't know what was happening in her long marriage. She didn't know what she didn't know. And so to have somebody like Tina come up and share her story is humbling. And also, she is one of thousands that the Women's Resource Center has served over the 50 years that we've been here.
And the beauty of Tina, for me, is in going back into the story of learning about Jeanette Smith and its impact on the formation of this agency, it's almost like the spirit of Jeanette is coming through her, too. And that's beautiful. She's really welcome here, and it's a celebration. That could be a celebration and a celebration of all the women because there's a lot of Jeanettes and Tinas out there that we don't know about, but they are there.
Yeah.
I'm Gretchen Carr. Thank you for listening to The Traverse Cityist. If you enjoyed this episode, you can show your gratitude by making a contribution at traversecityist.com. Do you or someone you know need help? The Women's Resource Center of Traverse City provides support and emergency shelter to those experiencing domestic violence 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. Call 800-554-4972. This episode of The Traverse Cityist was brought to you by 11. 11 is a woman-owned boutique in Traverse City, celebrating 10 years in our amazing community. We are all about sustainable designer fashion, accessories, and inspired decor, thoughtfully sourced with an emphasis on quality textiles and body positivity. Giving back is essential to what we do, which is why we are proud to support conversations that uplift women. Visit us in store or online to shop with purpose.